You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salada, Colorado, community-supported radio. And I want to say thanks to... my mind just went blank. Emily for the last... for Chick's Voices and having a great program prior to this. And We're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info, are linked from the khen.org website. And I'm Melody, and my co-host tonight is William Wallace, and he is... he's kind of a DJ in training, but he's also going to be some co-hosting tonight. And our special guest tonight is Dr. Major Doug Rocky. And I'm not sure which direction you go on that. But then before I go any further, let me say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And while we're at it, we need your help to help KHEN, keep KHEN alive and well. Because of our transmitter failure, we had to ask assistance from KRCC and thank them for lending of their spare transmitter. But we still must repair ours and acquire a backup one to stay on the air and healthy. And if the station has given you a smile and made you think on an issue, you can understand the benefits that KHEN offers. And we have been serving the community for almost 8 years and know how this unique this station really is. Radio that is not out to sell you, but to inform you of all things Salida and beyond. And we know how hard it is to give during this time of the year, and it seems that there are many asking for your money. So for those that have made KHEN a part of their day, we understand how very special your dollars given to us really are. And we want to thank you in advance for your support and the love that you've shown KHEN in the past and today. And please call us and show us your continued support. And our phone number is 539-1069. And call us in the daytime. And we would like to give us a moment of your time and stay on the air and become a healthier community radio today and in the future. And to, let me see, you never know how much you can miss something until it's gone. So please don't let this happen with KHEN. Please help us to continue to give back to the community and beyond, offering you the only true alternative to the commercial radio wasteland that's out there. So, oh, she took off with my matching foot sheet. Oh, okay. All right. Doug, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. I'm glad. Doug is back from, we had him on about almost 2 years ago, actually. And I kind of wanted to follow up and find out what's happening and let you go ahead and explain to our community again what your background is, because, I mean, if there's anybody with some credentials to speak on this subject, I would say that you probably have them. So yeah, this time he's back for a little bit longer so we can get a little bit more in depth on what's happening with our vets and military over in and what they're being exposed to. And go ahead and tell us about yourself.
I'm retired out of the U.S. Army, and I enlisted originally back in 1967, so that's some 42 years ago. And I just retired on my birthday here this last April, so it was quite a period of time. And I had active duty in the U.S. Air Force and obviously in the U.S. Army, and spent a little time playing around with the U.S. Marines, and then spent time in the Army National Guard, Illinois Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve. But it seemed like every time they had a problem, it was kind of like, well, we'll unlock the drawer and let Doug pop out, the rest of his friends, and call their team up and let them pop out of the drawer and have them fix our problems. And when they fix our problems, we'll try and lock them back up again. And it hasn't worked too well, because we had to make the conscious choice over many period of years with all the different things we worked on to tell the truth. What do we know about health and environmental effects of all the toxic munitions that we use in warfare, all of the techniques and operations that we conduct all over the world, whether it's training here in the United States or actual combat operations throughout the world. So it's been very, very interesting. My primary expertise, obviously, I spent some time as a combat medic and became what the Army called a health physicist, nuclear medical science officer in the Army Reserve about 1986, so that's 23 years ago. Or no, 23 years ago, a long time ago. And as a consequence, we got involved in Operation Desert Storm and continued to be involved, did a lot of training, did a lot of operations research, wrote a lot of the regulations for the U.S. Army in dealing with nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, and very specifically a thing called depleted uranium. Prior to Desert Storm, depleted uranium had been in the arsenal for quite a while, but they had not used it very much previously to that. And the conscious choice was to destroy Iraqi's military and its armor and everything else that came into our targeted gun sites with uranium munitions during Desert Storm. But nobody had planned how to clean it up and what to do with it. And all of a sudden, I got called over to the command post, and commanding general for the U.S. Army Medical Command, 3rd U.S. Army Medical Command, got a message on down from General Schwarzkopf, who said, find Doug Rocky and tell him to clean it all up. And, well, it's been a ride ever since now for the last, that was February of 1991. Well, actually, we got the first message in December of 1990, and this is 2009, so it's been an interesting haul. A long, long time.
And it's also taken its toll on your health in the process, correct?
Well, yeah, it's taken a terrible toll on myself and everybody else because we knew that this stuff had very, very serious health effects, very, very serious health environmental effects. And we knew that the protective equipment that the U.S. Army issued us when we were in war and that the U.S. Army and the U.S. Department of Energy issued us when we were doing the research at the Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada, didn't work. It just simply didn't work. And as a consequence, our health deteriorated. All of us that responded during Desert Storm with the completion of the ground war were all sick within 24 hours, just like all the friendly fire casualties and everybody else that was shot up with uranium munitions and everything else. So it turned into a total nightmare, and then we're continuously fighting with the Department of Veteran Affairs and Department of Defense for Medical Care. And the number of casualties today is just absolutely staggering numbers. And nobody wants to talk about it, and that's within the U.S. military. But more important, the effects on the civilians, whether they're over here in Jefferson Proving Ground in or around south to the southeast of Indianapolis, Indiana, or they're in Vieques, Puerto Rico, they're in Concord, Massachusetts, Albany, New York, down in Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. No matter where the stuff is, either manufactured or tested or used, and then obviously it's a nightmare in the Middle East, in Afghanistan, Somalia, the Balkans, Australia. It's bad. It's really bad.
Well, isn't it kind of up in the atmosphere, just kind of going around this planet now?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have to understand the amount of it. Uranium munitions, and this is one thing everybody has this idea of what they need to know what they are. Uranium munitions are basically our radioactive waste. And so the United States, Great Britain, Israel, Canada, Australia, decided to take a radioactive waste and form it into very extremely effective munitions and use them in combat. And as a consequence, thoroughly contaminate air, water, and soil. The uranium munitions that we do have consists of kinetic energy penetrators. And a kinetic energy penetrator is basically a gigantic dart of solid uranium, radioactive materials. So what we do know in the composition of the uranium weapons, what they call depleted uranium, it's primarily uranium-238, and then it has uranium-234, uranium-235, it has uranium-236, and then plutonium, neptunium, and americium. That's all in the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute report on depleted uranium that we did for the Secretary of the Army published that back in 1995. So that's what the uranium munitions consist of. Now, there's different ones. We have kinetic energy penetrators. These are the gigantic darts of uranium. And those come in 5.56 as the M16 bullet. They come in 7.62 millimeter, the machine gun bullet. They come in the 50 caliber machine gun and rifle bullet. They come in the 20 millimeter for the Navy Phalanx. And that's used by the Coast Guard and the Navy, all over the place. There, you know, we definitely total confirmation. Congressman James McDermott has total confirmation they've been shooting in Puget Sound off the coast of Seattle. We know they've been shooting in the Chesapeake Bay, so, and then all over the place. And then definitely off of San Diego and off of San Francisco, and then off of Newport and Norfolk, and then obviously down in Vieques, Puerto Rico. So those are 20-millimeter. It's a, you know, a chain gun loaded, mounted on the ships to take aircraft right out. Then we have the 25-millimeter round, and that's fired primarily by the Bradley fighting vehicle, used extensively in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Balkans, every place we go to war. And the 25-millimeter bullet. Then we have a 30-millimeter bullet that's fired by the A-10 Warthog aircraft. Incredibly effective. Again, the other aircraft, different fighters fire both the 25 and 30-millimeter round. Now, each one of these are just solid uranium. They're not coated. They're not tipped. They're solid radioactive materials. Then we have the 105-millimeter, 120-millimeter, and 125-millimeter rounds for tanks. And again, the 120, 105, 120, 125, that covers Israel's, Canada's, Britain's, U.S., and England's different tanks, the guns they have. So those are kinetic energy penetrators. And then what we have are our cluster bombs. These are the ADAM and the PDAM, and those are acronyms, ADAM and PDAM. And these, think of these as giant softballs, where the outer shell is uranium, the DU, and they're filled with high explosives. And then we have all the bunker busters, and we have all of the cruise missiles that also have uranium components. So it's pretty extensive. And then, for example, the 30-millimeter A-10 Warthog aircraft, each and every round is 3/4 of a pound of solid uranium. The tank rounds are right at 10 pounds of solid uranium each. Incredible amounts. And so we've just shot it up and spread it all over. On impact, this stuff becomes extremely fine. Particulate dust, extremely fine. HEPA filters will not, you know, remove it. They don't filter it out. And it just gets resuspended and goes all over the world and thoroughly contaminates air, water, and soil wherever it's used. It's a nightmare.
Okay, now, first of all, when you talked about the, you know, because I really haven't kept up on the casualties. I mean, I was following up pretty good at the beginning, and then I haven't heard as much on them. I don't hear them talking about them as much. Where are we on those?
Well, the casualty numbers is what they don't want anybody to know about, okay? You can go to the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs website, www.va.gov. And once you get there, what you want to look for in the search block is the Gulf War Veterans Information System. That's GWVIS. So you can use that search. And then you'll find out the compensation and pension statistics for, you know, Desert Storm and then Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And what you find out rapidly when you look at the VA's own data is that we're looking at 300,000 surviving Desert Storm veterans that have now applied for permanent medical care. And as of the last 96 hours, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is still willfully and deliberately denying wounded, injured, and ill Desert Storm combat veterans medical care. And that's 19 years after the fact, deliberately and willfully without any hesitation.
So now are you just following the Desert Storm and not the ones since? Or what?
Absolutely not. So we know that we've got 300,000 from Desert Storm. We know that the death count now, out of 600 and some thousand that participate in Desert Storm, over 80,000 have died now from what we call Gulf War illness. And that we know we have over 300,000, that's, you know, over 50% now applied for permanent medical care. But when we get to Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, what we do know from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs' own website and the U.S. Army's own website is that we're looking at 1 million casualties. 1 million. 1 million of America's sons and daughters are in serious, serious medical problems.
So now we're kind of coming up to the numbers that I hear them talk about for the Iraqis.
The Iraqi numbers are in the millions. It's okay. Absolutely staggering. We've had more than one conference with the United Nations and other private groups and everything all over the world. And all of those medical reports are there. All of the birth defects are there. Horrible cancer risk, cancer problems. All of the respiratory problems, everything else, just like what we're seeing with the U.S. military. For example, I mean, the one report, now I can pull it up and look at it right now, and I've sent this to you, and you can post it, is the January 2009 report, okay? And this, again, is, what, 12 months ago now. But at that time, we were looking at right at, you know, a half a million, okay, serious casualties, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And along the U.S. military alone. And when we look at all of these things, when we look at the medical problems that are being diagnosed, okay, we got 12% infectious and parasitic diseases. We got 1% with confirmed malignant cancers. We got 4% with benign cancers. We get the endocrine nutritional metabolic problems. We're looking at 23%. Leukemia is at 2.5%. PTSD and mental disorders, we're looking at 45% of those deployed. Neurological, and that's affected all of us and affects me tremendously, is 37%. When we look at the circulatory system, this is the cardiac and everything, we're looking at 17%. The respiratory, and I got massive respiratory problems, 21%. Digestive system, I mean, getting explosive diarrhea and, you know, all kinds of digestive problems all the way from the stomach all through the intestines on out, we're looking at 33%. General unitary, we're looking at 11%. The skin rashes and everything, and my rash right now is open and horrible because our weather is changing, 17%. We get the muscular skeletal system, and the primary diagnosis there is fibromyalgia, for which the VA is, you know, acknowledging and providing that disability for, 49%. Ill-defined symptoms and problems that they can't find up any current diagnosis for, what's called ICD-9 code.
Category. Just a minute, what was the 49% one?
49% is muscular skeletal systems. So what you've got is you've got all the neural, the muscles are real bad shape, and you got the skeletal injuries. And that's what happened to me, where I just literally got released from surgery from the surgeon just a couple weeks ago after 11 months. And, over 11 months. And what the VA had absolutely paid the, you know, top-notch surgeon here in Central Illinois to do at Carl Spinal Institute is do all the spinal surgery on me to correct the problems and then go into rehab. And the meds trying to reestablish all my neurological networks because of the toxins I got involved in with DU. They just literally destroyed it.
Uh-huh.
And we see that all over. So we're looking at 49%. And that's, you'll hear that in the newspapers all over the place. What happened to the vets are coming back from Desert Storm and Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. They're having all kinds of neurological problems, and obviously that affects their hearing, their sight, their balance, their coordination, their sleep, everything else. And then it just goes down, so we have an incredible number of car accidents and everything else. So, I mean, we're looking at, and again, these numbers, the percentages we're seeing for diagnosis from Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom are the same thing, but we're matching for Desert Storm. So the VA's got a nightmare. They've got about a half a million of us Vietnam vets from Agent Orange still suffering from that, 300,000 from Desert Storm from the complex exposures from that plus, and then we're looking at one million U.S. casualties totally confirmed by the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs for Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. Yeah. They don't want anybody to know.
Okay, now
you have to understand, neither the VA nor the Department of Defense under Dr. Michael Kilpatrick want anybody to know about these actual numbers and what's causing the casualties for the U.S., much less all the civilians that, you know, we went into their countries and attacked and contaminated air, water, soil, and food and then walked away.
I keep running into vets that have, you know, gone back three or four times. I sit in amazement when I'm hearing these other figures you're talking about. What is it that makes these people be able to keep going back, or are they taking them back ill, or do you have any? Am I making sense here?
Yeah, you are. The problem we're running into, number one, they are deploying individuals that should definitely not be deployed with medical problems, whether it's PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's turned into a nightmare. Or we have individuals with respiratory and cardiac. I mean, there isn't a single day that doesn't go by where we hear of a soldier dropping dead over in Iraq or Afghanistan. It has nothing to do with any combat engagement. They're just dropping dead. And that's happening here throughout the United States on an almost daily basis. So we have all that. Now, what we have to understand in the military, and those of us in the military, let's put it together, is kind of a John Wayne and Rambo mentality. You want to belong to the group, and you want to do what's good, and you get a thrill out of killing and destroying. I mean, it's a real hoot. And so they just go and do it. And they get a charge out of doing it. And so they keep going back, and they going back, and they going back to do it over and over again because it gives them some meaning, some purpose in their life. Control over death, life and death, without justification, but they can do it. And so you have that macho John Wayne Rambo image, and then you have all the incredible amount of lies that are propagated in the military, like, well, the Afghanistan's are such a threat to us, we have to occupy their nation. But we have to come back and say, wait a minute, what are we doing over there? We're building up their military. Now, wait a minute. If they're such a threat to us, why would we want to build up their military?
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, and then the other thing was, say, well, we're training the Afghans. Well, you're going to take some young kid here from the backwoods or the city in Illinois or Colorado or wherever anybody is. They barely speak English. They've got the IQ of a bullfrog. And they're going to train Afghans who have fought off and prevented invasion and occupation of their nation for thousands of years. It just doesn't even make any sense whatsoever. So the Afghans have to understand neither Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, or Korea have ever attacked us. They don't have an Air Force. They don't have a Navy. They do not have, the fine U.S. Marines. They have no way to attack us.
Okay,
they never have and never will.
Okay, now, you've been at this a while, definitely, and what I'm hearing from other people, I mean, there's got to be some contention going on within the troops with this sort of thing. Those that have heard about this, are they all just kept in the dark, or what?
Well, there's a combination of two things. My phone rings off the hook. I get stopped on the street. I get parents to stop me. I get spouses to stop me. I get children to stop me. They stop me. They stop my family. You know, my kids got tired of being stopped and asked for help. Once they get affected, they come screaming for help. What we do know has happened, and we have to understand, General Eric Shinseki, who is now the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, back in 1993, after all of our reports from Desert Storm, issued the orders mandating medical care for all depleted uranium casualties, issued the orders mandating that everybody would receive the full DU training, training and education to handle and be around this stuff, and that we clean up the environment. And so he issued that order personally in August of 1993. Well, that got me back on active duty again in 1994. You have to understand, I went on active duty originally in December 7th of 1967. Because of Shinseki's order and everything else, I went back as the director for the U.S. Army Depleted Uranium Project, which ended up being the U.S. Department of Defense, which ended up being a NATO project, because they had British, Australian, Canadian, and German officers assigned to me to do the work. And I went back on active duty again in 1994 and got off in 1995, Thanksgiving Day. Yeah, Thanksgiving for me personally has been, I went over to Vietnam for the second time on Thanksgiving Day in 1969, went to Desert Storm on Thanksgiving Day in 1990, got off active duty for the last time on Thanksgiving Day in 1995. Not a good day.
So, but you're still involved.
I'm still involved, and always will be involved. I'm a retired military officer that was given a direct order by General Schwarzkopf and General Shinseki and other numerous generals to figure out how to clean up all the depleted uranium mess, how to develop all of the training required for our troops, develop all the emergency response procedures, and we did. So there was actually a 40-hour training program, Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3, that everybody in the military is supposed to complete regards to management and safety around uranium munitions. 40 hours of classroom and field training. And then we developed all that training, and it's been ordered and it's not happening. They're not giving it to anybody. And then we developed what's called common task training. And common task training is in the Soldier's Manual of Common Task. Everybody in the military is supposed to master all of these tasks. These are the tasks that make you a soldier. And there's one very specifically on depleted uranium. And in there it states very clearly you have to wear respiratory protection around you, you have to clean up the environment, you have to decontaminate yourself, you have to give yourself immediate medical care, okay, just like for, you know, like you do for any combat injury. But it also states very clearly that the uranium munitions contamination makes food and water unusable for eternity. So we're telling everybody in the soldier that if you use this, the food and water around you is thoroughly contaminated forever. You can't ever use it again. And so we have all that. And then what I wrote for them, and General Shinseki personally signed off on this again. So he wrote it in 1993. We did all the work. And then in 2002, now, he's chief of staff of the Army, you know, like General Eisenhower. Everybody understands Eisenhower and MacArthur. Well, Shinseki got to that same role. And then he signed off on U.S. Army Regulation 700-48, that mandates it thoroughly and completely. You have to isolate, secure, clean up the environment. You have to provide medical care. You have to do training. You have to comply with all the environmental laws, not only the U.S. and United States environmental laws and the environmental laws of the community here, but all the environmental laws all over the world, and they ignore it. And so you've got a real mess. And what we see today is those in the U.S. military, they're very, very mad at all of us for speaking out. They claim that we weren't there, we didn't do the work, there is no health hazard from this stuff. But yet when you get to their own internal documents, they thoroughly, thoroughly acknowledge the serious health problems. And at the same time, I was actually given an order in March of 1991 to lie in all our reports to sustain the use of uranium munitions and avoid all liability. A direct order, a written order.
So when was the last time you were actually over there? Was it 95?
The last time I was actually in the Middle East doing all this stuff was with Desert Storm. And then we did all the research with the Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada, and Fort McClellan, Alabama, Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland, and all over the different other military installations in the 90s. Because, yeah, I mean, by that time, there's no way I could get deployed again because... I mean, I couldn't pass a physical Army physical exam, and I definitely couldn't pass an Army physical PT test,
mm-hmm.
you know, physical training.
But
I mean,
could they...
be able to run 2 miles in 15 minutes.
Okay.
I can't go 2 miles under any condition.
But can they still utilize you as consulting or anything like that?
Well, yeah, they still call us whenever they have a problem. It's astonishing. They're mad at us completely, but whenever they have a problem, they'll still call us. I don't know how to describe it.
What do you think, I mean, how do you address the fact of what's really going on, or do you even look at it in those terms? I mean, because when you say that they're doing one thing that opposes the other, and it doesn't make sense, doesn't it cause you to step back and start looking at what is really going on, and why would they be doing that sort of thing?
Well, let's go back and understand, because we got thoroughly involved in planning both Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, just like we did in Desert Storm, okay? And when we look at the directives for Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, it's very, very simple. And the only way to do this is I'm going to just give you the direct quote, okay?
Okay.
The direct quote on what started what we know the invasion of Afghanistan comes from a February 12, 1998 congressional discussion. And its U.S. interests in Central Asian Republic, hearing before the Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific of the Committee on International Relations in the U.S. House of Representatives. You know, long titles, right? And this is February 12th of 1998. And what was the discussion about Afghanistan and oil pipelines? And what it was, it all came down to very, very clearly, and quote, last October, the Central Asia Gas Pipeline Consortium, called CENTGAS, in which Unocal holds an interest, was formed to develop a gas pipeline which will link Turkmenistan's vast Dadabad gas field with the markets in Pakistan and possibly India. The proposed 790-mile pipeline will open new markets for this gas traveling from Turkmenistan through Afghanistan into Pakistan. The proposed extension would move gas onto New Delhi, where it would connect with the existing pipeline. As for a proposed Central Asia oil pipeline, this is the one that... went to the west through Soviet Georgia. send gas cannot begin construction until an internationally recognized Afghanistan government is in place. Well, the Taliban refused to go along with what we were telling them to do because we were going to steal their resources and not pay them. And so we were ordered to overthrow them. It's that simple.
Right, and but also wouldn't this factor possibly be there because of the EPA or world environmental, I guess the EPA wouldn't be affected there, but I mean the environmental effects of this type of weaponry and that sort of thing going on, if they keep it in eternal war, then they don't have to address those kind of things.
That's correct. I mean, I've been working with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission investigators here recently over all the contamination that's all over the Hawaii. And what the military forgets, and my friends in the military that are running all this, is they still need to comply with environmental laws. Well, they just thoroughly disregard the environmental laws. They thoroughly disregard the health and environmental effects of all this stuff, even though their internal documents thoroughly acknowledge everything. For example, with depleted uranium, when we started all this stuff back in 1990-91, in March of 1991, there were two memorandums that were written. One was written by Colonel Michael Zine from Los Alamos, New Mexico, the National Nuke Lab. And Colonel Zine stated, that was the order that told us to lie on the reports to sustain the use of uranium munitions because they've become politically unacceptable because of the health and environmental effects. And the other one came from the U.S. Department of Defense Defense Nuclear Agency. These are the head bomb guys. And in that one, Colonel Lyle stated very clearly this stuff's a serious health hazard and we've got to do something to clean it all up. Well, that got me on the job from General Schwarzkopf to do it during Desert Storm, and it's, you know, consumed my life ever since. And so it's a real mess. But each and every time we came across, we had more and additional information that thoroughly acknowledged the serious health medical problems. For example, when we started the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute study in 1993, January 1993, we were ordered very clearly by Assistant Secretary of the Army Walker, quote, to figure out how to reduce the toxicity of depleted uranium. And what we found when we wrote the reports very clearly, quote, no available technology can significantly change the inherent chemical and radiological toxicity of depleted uranium. These are intrinsic properties of uranium, end quote.
Yeah.
So that was, United States Senate ordered us to do it, to figure out how to do it. Secretary Walker ordered us to do it. We couldn't do it. We never could. But then we came up to Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And in preparation for that, there were a lot of briefings at the Pentagon, okay? And obviously, they were taking our information very seriously, what we did know and what we have learned from our own medical problems, dealing with all this stuff and doing the field research. And again, we have to understand the military, and everybody wants us to act as if there's no problem. They avoid liability, and so they act like more research has to be done. But all the research has been done and the decisions were done. That was the reason why the Army regulations were issued and all the direct orders for medical care have been issued so many times. I mean, it's just an incredible number of times ever since I issued the original one. So when we come on down to it, in 2002, in preparation for Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, which were planned back in the 90s, you have to understand they were planned in the 90s under Clinton directives. Okay, Dick Cheney's got his finger all the way through everything.
So you're saying they plan these years in advance?
Oh, absolutely. We were thoroughly involved in it. Absolutely.
Okay, what are they planning next?
Yeah, well, Iran and Korea.
But you know what? I remember reading when the PNAC documents back in 99. It sounded like those were, you know, targets that were on their agenda back then.
Oh, absolutely.
And when I went back to find that information in the way that I had remembered it being, it seemed like it had been rewritten. And
yeah, congratulations.
And
so what we have is Colonel J. Edgar Wakiyama. He was director of the Department of Defense Operational Test and Evaluation Command. He briefed the senior leadership of the Pentagon on health and environmental effects of depleted uranium munitions in 2002 in preparation for the current wars. And I'm looking at the briefing. You've got the direct citation for it. You can post it on your website.
Okay.
With information I sent you, and again, the whole briefing, and you can post it right up there. And it's very, very clear. I mean, we know that the alpha, beta, and gamma particles cause cell damage in cancer. Lung cancer is well documented. This is all direct quotes right off of the briefing. The beta particle is hazardous to the skin and the lens of the eye.
What about diabetes?
Down, we have all the alpha, beta, and gamma radiations causing medical. It's a heavy. It's chemically toxic, like lead. Target organs, the kidney and the bone. And what we see is decalcification of the bone. But the other problem, and this has affected me right now, and it's, I mean, again, more surgery, is the teeth. Because your teeth are calcium and phosphorus. And the uranium just leaches your phosphorus and calcium right out of the teeth, and they disintegrate. So you end up with no teeth. And then you come on down, and you have, you quote, urine samples containing uranium are mutagenic as determined by the Ames test. In other words, it's not a good idea to pee on your fingers. Cultured human stem bone cell line with DU has also transformed the cells to become carcinogenic. So there's your leukemias that we're seeing in incredible numbers all over the world.
Then that's going to
continue on and on and on. So the internal briefings thoroughly acknowledge the serious health and environmental effects of what we have seen, but at the same time, we continue to use them with a complete and thorough disregard.
Okay, so then they're building this big compound over there in Baghdad. What do they do? Replace all the dirt and expect that to work?
No, they're not. And then, see, again, under Army Regulation 700-48, they thoroughly have to pick that all up, clean, isolate it, and secure it. And what happened here in the last 2 years is after Desert Storm, we had assembled a whole bunch of weapons and munitions at a place called Camp Doha in Kuwait. Well, there were some idiots up there, and they forgot to put a grounding strap on a truck. It caught fire and caused massive explosions. And I was back at the University of Illinois, and the rest of our team couldn't be reached, and they called me and said, what are we doing? I said, well, you got to follow the guidelines we put in place. Isolate, secure, clean up the area, give medical care, decontaminate, and walk away. Well, what happened, that all happened in the summer of 1991. Well, now about a year and a half ago, the Kuwaiti government took the directives that we had written in the, again, winter of 1992, spring of 1993. Our team wrote for them. Again, we were ordered to do it by Madeleine Albright and General Greenberg, and we did it and passed it all over there. They hired a company called Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, Dick Cheney's company, okay? And they got the no-bid contract to go over, and what they did is they brought back about, I don't know, what, 7,000 tons of all the contaminated air, equipment, soil, and everything out of Kuwait, and they buried it now in, they're burying it in Boise, Idaho.
That's, I thought I'd heard that. So they're bringing all the stuff that we're messing up over there and bringing it back over here.
Yeah, it's not only the radiological contamination, but it got all the microbes and everything from agriculture and the dirt and soil. And so, I mean, you know, it's what it means for Idaho's agricultural sector and safety is just incredible. Nuclear Regulatory Commission said they have no jurisdiction over the company that's doing it up in Boise, Idaho, when I talked to them the other day.
So how do they, are they bringing this in on rail? Or?
Yeah, they brought it over on ships, and they put it on rail cars, and they shipped it across. What was real interesting, following Desert Storm, I shipped all the contaminated Abrams tanks and Bradley fighting vehicles back from Saudi Arabia, back to Charleston, South Carolina. And then they carried them on rail from Charleston, South Carolina, over to Barnwell, South Carolina, again, where the U.S. Department of Energy has their Savannah River site, and contaminated the area all the way across. And then, you know, I've measured contamination on U.S. equipment that's still being brought back to this day. So, I mean, you know, it's there. Stuff that came back from Desert Storm and went over now, and this time, again, the same thing. The other concerns, and this is a massive concern, was come up in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
This is a quote, emerging environmental concerns include a significant exposure to depleted uranium among children playing in impacted sites by ingesting heavily contaminated soil, slow leaching depleted uranium in local water supplies over years, consuming DU-contaminated food sources, animal and plants.
And this is the island of Hawaii, or which island?
This is every place.
Okay.
But again, obviously, it's, you know, again, here in the last few weeks, it's a significant issue in Hawaii. And the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is looking at it. And what they need to do over there is just, you know, and they need to revoke the U.S. Army's license for use of uranium munitions and tell them they can't fire it in Hawaii, and they need to order them to clean up all the contaminations already there and provide medical care to all of the incredible U.S. civilian casualties around the training and weapons ranges in Hawaii.
Maybe they'll
and
do
over here in Jefferson Proving Ground. I was talking to down in one of the local schools down there, the guys in the local schools, the cancer rates down at Jefferson Proving Ground here in southeast Indianapolis are staggering, right off of the range where they're firing this stuff as we talk.
What it looks to me like they might possibly do like they did, I mean, with Rocky Flats. I mean, they'll just throw
Rocky Flats is a nightmare. We got involved in that thoroughly. Oh, my.
Yeah, so they just pour some dirt over it and then sell houses.
Well, it didn't quite work out that way because when they were starting to clean it up, and Major Denise Nichols, who's the nurse on our team, she lives in Wheat Ridge, Colorado.
Yeah, I interviewed her. So.
Yeah. We got involved. What had happened is the local trash company there from Denver was dumping trash, and they found a whole bunch of explosives and bombs dumped into the, you know, civilian trash full of chemical weapons and everything else. And we got called, okay, guys, what do? You guys are the experts. You know, we got all the information to them, and we forced the U.S. Army to clean it all up. So, I mean, you guys got a nightmare out there in Colorado. Absolutely. And then I don't even want to think about what's happening on down south of Colorado Springs at the Army Post.
Rocky, this is William Wallace.
I mean, Rocky Flats, all the other ones are a nightmare out there.
Rocky, this is William Wallace speaking here. Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
And my comment is my jaw is on the floor with astonishment. The insanity of this is so enormous that I can't believe that it's accidents or a little bit of stupidity somewhere. This seems like it must have some kind of an underlying plan to it that isn't on the surface. Have you ever sensed that or looked into who would want to cause this much insanity and harm to the earth, to humanity, to life?
Well, you have to come back, and I understand your concern and what you're asking, okay? But you're coming from the sense of a civilian and somebody that's fighting for peace. You have to look at this from the mentality of the military. That when we choose a weapon to go to war with, we don't give a hoot about the health and environmental effects. We are only concerned, will it kill and destroy the enemy? And when we do that, again, we have the John Wayne Rambo attitude that we're immune. I mean, if you watch TV every day with the soldiers over there in Iraq and Afghanistan, these guys are standing up in broad daylight, up like they're in the middle of a, you know, a field, and trying to shoot at the guys, or they're running around and they've got so much equipment hanging on them they couldn't get down in the dirt if it meant for anything. They're doing entries into buildings, holding on to each other's shoulder, and then we wonder why they're getting blown up. I mean, we just had another one of our sons buried yesterday here. He got blown up over in, you know, in Afghanistan just, you know, a couple weeks ago. And we've lost three here in our community in the last month and a half. And again, for no reason whatsoever. And no, the senior leadership of the military, the commanders, they don't care. Here's the assignment, go blow this up and destroy this. They don't think about the health and environmental effects. They don't think about the medical complications. They don't think about who's going to give medical care to the wounded, ill, or injured soldiers. Who's going to give medical care to the family members who get cross-contaminated when all this stuff comes back?
Well, after interviewing some of the couple of the people that you had referred to me, and then also doing an interview with Edwin Crosby, it kind of came to me that it appears that they don't really want these troops to come back healthy. And yet, I mean, which sounds kind of absurd, but at the same time, maybe there's another, like William's stating, there's another reason for the, you know, troops not being able to be useful at home in some respect. And I know that's a wide-reaching, as some people would say with me, conspiratorial thought, but you know, when they go to such extremes to save them on the battlefield, and yet at the same time expose them to so many things that, and expose them over and over and over again, and then bring the stuff back home here, you have to start wondering what's behind that.
Stupidity.
Well, you know,
I mean, I wish
you know, give them
you're
more.
Coming, I mean, I have to come back. You have to come from the military mindset. And this is one of the hardest things. When I got involved, you know, working with individuals in the peace movement, you have to understand, I'm a warrior. You have to understand that loud and clear.
Right.
Okay, I will not hesitate whatsoever to blow somebody up or kill somebody. I won't hesitate. If it's required, if it's necessary, if it's a viable threat, I won't hesitate. But we have to end up coming from the other point of view. And so many individuals, when I got involved in the peace movement, again, had this, just like what you both of you are describing, the ethical and the moral domain. It doesn't come into play. It's not considered. That's the hardest thing for somebody outside the military to grasp. It does not come into play. And so, granted, we're putting all these people in a significant hazard. For example, all of these burnings and incineration in Iraq and Afghanistan, all the toxic substances, in addition to depleted uranium. Incredible medical problems, and they just thoroughly disregard the health and environmental effects of all this stuff, even though their internal documents totally acknowledge everything, and go on their merry way.
Yeah, but it isn't really the military that's being, I mean, they're doing taking orders from somewhere else is where...
No. They just do it. It's a whole combination all the way through. So the senior leadership knows of all the health and environmental effects of the military operations we do. The destruction we cause, releasing all of the inorganic, organic chemical compounds, biological materials, and radiological materials that are in industry, agriculture, education, and medicine. We release it all over contaminated air, water, and soil, and we thoroughly disregard it.
So you're saying that there's more involved than just depleted uranium that's being exploded?
Oh, by far more.
Okay.
I mean, by far more. In Desert Storm, it was the same thing. And when we did the report for the National Academy of Sciences, the Department of Defense, Congressional Report, and during the storm, we had all the chemical and biological materials. We had all the hazardous materials. We have depleted uranium from the weapons. We have all the radiological materials from all of the materials that we blew up and released in our own equipment. We have all the pesticides. We have all the complex chemical compounds from the oil well fires. So Desert Storm is probably the most toxic wartime environment ever encountered, because it was current technology blowing up current technology. And then when we get to Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom, now what we have is pesticides, total misuse of pesticides again. And I wrote that report originally for the National Academy of Sciences on misuse in Desert Storm. And then we have depleted uranium. Then we have all the hazardous materials from the burn pits and everything else, and what we release as we blew up all these countries and their houses and their factories and their homes and, you know, their hospitals and everything else, sewage sanitation plants, water treatment facilities, and released all of that stuff.
Have they ever
and
used
then
any?
We have depleted uranium, extraordinary use against all known targets.
Did they ever use anything of like a neutron type of weapon? Were you at all?
No, that I know of.
Okay, or are directed energy weapons at all?
Oh, absolutely. Boy, they're great things. We have the Buck Rogers ray gun, okay, and that's basically a microwave radar, super microwave gun that's mounted on the back of Humvees where it can be fixed in placement. And what it is a gigantic microwave gun, and you send out the beam and it cooks people alive. So they're definitely using that in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Secretary of the U.S. Air Force ordered for use here in the civilian, anybody, civilians that are protesting here in the United States, and they've already done it. They cooked a whole bunch of people alive down in Georgia with this stuff, and we got involved in that, trying to get medical care for everybody. So it works just like a microwave oven. You send out the beam. It hits the individual. It cooks them alive from the inside out.
How did that happen in Georgia?
Well, they were just they just wanted to do it. They did it.
And they're not giving psychological tests to the guys running this thing, huh?
No, yeah, you know, again, it's a Pavlov dog theory. You know, you talk to these guys and they'll do this stuff. I mean, you have to come back. Why would anybody use any of these weapons and everything we do anyhow? Why would anybody believe this stuff and go over and kill Iraqis in Afghanistan that have never attacked us, pose no threat to us and get a thrill and a charge out of killing them. And then I come on down here, and this is what the other thing that bothers me. They make them out like they're heroes. I mean, they could be fine kids and everything else, and, you know, all this stuff, absolutely no doubt about it, but they're into the military.
Rocky, when and what city did the this microwave event occur in Georgia?
Oh, I'd have to go back and pull it up.
Okay.
it was part of the military operations and everything they were doing. And
when they do these drills and that sort around, because you know, it seems like they're doing a lot of drills over here for various events, do they use anything that could possibly be like these directed energy weapons?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, they do?
Absolutely. Project Shed continues to this day. Back in September 12th of 2006, the Secretary of the Army, or Secretary of the Air Force, the Secretary of the Air Force at that time gave a direct order. His name was Secretary Michael Wynn, W-Y-N-N-E, to use the Buck Roger ray gun on civilians who were protesting. Okay. The other one happened at Moody Air Force Base outside of Atlanta. And this happened on April 6th of 2007.
Okay, so these are smaller mobile type micro. Do they make bigger ones?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're good stuff. I mean, they're great. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we've continued to do this. You know, we yell at other countries for weapons that they want to do and want to test, and then we go about and develop and we use them.
Yeah,
and we thoroughly, totally disregard the health and environmental effects on our own military and on the other nations that we affected, the citizens of the other nation. You have to understand, if we had a viable threat against us, okay, then that's one thing entirely. But when these nations don't pose any viable threat to us, by what right can we do that? I mean, what right do we have to take, you know, thousands and thousands of tons of our radioactive waste and spread it across the United States and disregard it, okay, and then go over and spread it in the Balkans and disregard it, Somalia and disregard it, Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia and disregard it, Australia and disregard it, you know, because Puerto Rico is part of the U.S., but they totally disregarded it down there. And then, you know, Colorado, have fun.
And, well, also, I am aware that they also turn around and try to sell lots there at Vieques.
Yeah.
I do know of somebody that had bought some land there, and they were actually a wealthy person, too.
Yeah, well, congratulations, you know. They bought the bridge, didn't they?
Let me go ahead and say that you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And this is community-supported radio, and we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And tonight, my co-host is William Wallace, and our guest is Dr. Doug Rocky, and he is... been so kind to come back with us and let us know what is going on up at this point in time with the depleted uranium. And it sounds like there's all kinds of other interesting weapons that where the troops are being exposed to and around. And I was going to ask you, is there any residual effects from these directed energy weapons?
Good question. We don't know to this day, do we?
I mean, it doesn't release any kind of radiation?
Well, it's definitely RF radiation, and again, like your cell phone, it's RF radiation. I mean, there's a lot of questions in that. I mean, there's been a lot of medical conferences questioning this stuff. Of course, you know, when you're cooking a person alive and get them to retreat, you know, yeah, I mean, they're going to run off real fast, but then you have the long-term health effects, and there's all indications from medical research that there is long-term health effects.
Well, is there any other kind of interesting weaponry in here that we might want to know about, or can you
well,
not say?
Well,
you've
got the thermobaric bombs, you know, and all this stuff. These are specialized explosives that cross incredible fires and everything deep within a structure, a building, or a cave. That's what they've used all over in Tora Bora and all over Afghanistan.
How do those work?
Afghanistan is just a medical disaster. Every conference we've been to... talking with the individuals, whether it's the United Nations or here in the United States or another place in Europe, or, you know, the information we get, it's a thorough medical disaster. and we're totally disregarding the health and environmental effects, and we don't provide medical care to any of these people. We don't even provide medical care to our own.
Well, one of the things when I was interviewing Edwin Crosby is even if, you know, they go way out of their way not to even recognize or deal with the vets after they come back. And then he got into something called a straw man, and which was another aspect that made it impossible for some of these vets to get taken care of.
Well, see, the problem we're running into, number one, the military is destroying their medical records. They're destroying their personnel records, or they're hiding them. We know that's happening. I personally went down to St. Louis, Missouri, to the National Records Center and totally confirmed it on myself and my team. No question. We went into the vault and confirmed. Okay, so we have all that problem. And then what happens when the warrior comes back, in order to get medical care, now we set it up, Denise Nichols, again, out there in Denver, was very active in this, got us set up to where we would force the VA to agree to provide medical care to any returning warrior without question for a certain period of years, if you can get there and get an appointment. But then what actually you have to do, and just like throughout the history of the VA and the military, you have to apply for a disability. In other words, you have to submit the paperwork and prove that the medical problem that you have, whether it's being wounded, you know, shot, blown up, or whatever, injured, or made ill, occurred as a direct result of your military service. And you have to prove the causal relationship. I mean, they're going to do everything they can to prevent it, so they want you to prove it. Well, you can't do it with the documents. You don't have the documents, you don't have the reports. And then when you do submit them and submit the evidence, it disappears. For example, here in Chicago, Illinois, at the regional office VA center, in my own case, we know that the information, the records and reports that we definitely submitted through the Danville VA Medical Center in Danville, Illinois, never got there. Never got there. Okay, we absolutely know over here at Danville, in my own case, the Danville VA Medical Center, that one of the medical professionals over there deliberately and willfully altered my medical records to prevent acknowledging what was going on.
Are there a lot of cases of diabetes that's related to this exposure?
Pardon me?
Is there a lot of cases of diabetes?
Absolutely, for Agent Orange. Absolutely.
Okay,
boy, I mean, it's ripping through everything. So we know what the health and environmental effects of Agent Orange is, and that's ripping about 500,000 Vietnam vets, and all of us are now 60 years old and plus, okay? But then when we get to all the other stuff, and what I'd like to quote from here, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, Vision 11, this is, the VA is broken up into regions, okay? And the area that covers here, where we cover East Central Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, is Vision 11. So the director for Vision 11 put out a book called, quote, Some Things You Need to Know About Veterans, A Clinician's Guide to Veteran-Specific Issues. This is for physicians treating sick and ill-injured, wounded veterans, okay, that come to them for medical care. And what they very specifically come down to, they cover PTSD, and this is important to understand. The signs and symptoms for PTSD, quote, recurring thoughts, mental images, or nightmares of traumatic events, sleep problems, changes in appetite, experiencing fear and anxiety when exposed to events, situations, similar characteristics, traumatic event. Overly alert, startled easily, being on edge most of the time. Depression and sadness with low energy. Unable to concentrate, focus on work or daily activities. Difficulty making decisions. Feeling irritable, angry, and becoming easily agitated. Feeling emotionally numb, becoming withdrawn. Crying episodes and feeling despair and hopelessness. Demonstrating excessive fear for the safety of others, being overly protective. And then inability to talk or face the aspects of trauma. Avoiding activities, places, or people reminded of the event, end quote. So those are the primary signs and symptoms of PTSD. What we do know is PTSD today is a function of toxic exposures that affect neurophysiology, how the brain works, just like, you know, pesticide poisoning in the farmer. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And then the other thing, too, is we have the realization normal combat fears. I mean, you have to go from sheer peace to complete tranquility in a nanosecond.
No,
so we call that peeing in your pants scare.
Okay, now I was also hearing that some of them were being accused of having the PTSD before they went in, so they had a pre-existing.
Yeah, well, you know, then they should have never been deployed. You know, you're supposed to be, you know, there's supposed to be a pre-deployment physical and a post-deployment physical, which they're not doing it. We just got total confirmation about 3 weeks ago that over 25% of all the post-employment physicals are mandated, have disappeared. They were mandated and completed, have disappeared. They just disappeared from the Army, from the military. They just disappeared. One day there was a fire. So we've got PTSD as a function of neurotoxicity, all of the toxic exposures affecting how the brain functions. Just like pesticides affect the farmer and the toxic and the factory worker with all the organic solvents and all this other stuff. Then you got peeing in your pants scared. And then you have the realization this is all based on lies. You have to understand, Iraq absolutely did not have any chemical biological weapons a couple years after Desert Storm. They had them before Desert Storm because the U.S. Army deliberately and willfully gave them to them, including anthrax. But we destroyed all that stuff when we made the decision to destroy it in December of 1990, and I was involved in that decision. And during Desert Storm, and Schwarzkopf, General Schwarzkopf involved, General Powell was involved, General Horner was involved, Dick Cheney was involved, and all of our command staff was involved. That's in Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero, on page 390. He totally acknowledges it. So there was nothing left. So we destroyed it, starting beginning in 1990. Scott Ritter and his team finished it all, you know, went in and the Iraqis destroyed it. There was nothing left by 1994, 1995. So that was all thorough lies.
And things have not changed since then either.
No, they haven't changed at all. I mean, so all that stuff is coming down. So then you have the realization all this stuff is on with total lies, whether it's 911, that Iraq chemical and biological, that Afghan and Iraq attacked us, you know, it didn't happen. So that's all affecting PTSD. Then the other thing we have is total alcohol and drug abuse within the military. Staggering, staggering amounts. And we work on that on a daily basis. Guys on active duty, coming off active duty, coming home, and they scream for help.
Is this while they're in or when they get home?
While they're still in.
So it's kind of like the Vietnam thing again? Or?
Oh, no. There's no comparison. Vietnam use was irrelevant. Almost non-existent in comparison to the current thing. Because you have to understand, the military has been issuing amphetamines to the military to keep them going.
Then they just set them up for the PTSD.
Isn't that great? Then you have traumatic brain injury. And traumatic brain injury, again, is a function of all the explosions and all the toxins. And again, direct symptoms and all this stuff there are very dizziness, nausea, insomnia, behavioral concentration problems, irritability, depression, anxiety, poor vision, tired eyes, ringing in the ears, bad taste in the mouth, fatigue, and mood changes. That's all direct quote. Then you get the more moderate and severe stuff, headaches, again, painful headaches and all this stuff, convulsions, seizures, inability to awaken, dilation of the eye pupils, slurred speech, weakness, numbness in the arms and legs, loss of coordination, numbness in the arm, and increased confusion, restlessness and confusion. And again, all of us have had that stuff. These are all, I'm giving you direct quotes.
Okay, now what about when they do get treatment? Is it even effective treatment?
No, it's not. It's basically, turn your head and cough. You get a 10 or 15 minute appointment. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to acknowledge it. My doctor, because I know where all the bodies are buried and have all the information, the documents, they're, what's happened next? Anytime I show up, they get scared. We get into Gulf War illnesses, signs and symptoms, direct quotes, fatigue, skin rash, headache, muscle and joint pain, memory loss, shortness of breath, sleep disturbances, diarrhea and other GI symptoms, problems involving skin and all the tissue, that's your rash, chest pain. Very specifically, depleted uranium. Now, we've talked about what depleted uranium is, and again, I've been totally involved in this because I was ordered to clean it up and get medical care and to develop the training. Direct quote, the signs and physical symptoms which occur as an exposure to depleted uranium are, direct quote from the Department of Veterans Affairs, Physician Guidelines for Vision 11, excuse me, sleep problems, mood swings, symptoms in the upper and lower terminal respiratory system. You can hear mine, can't you? Neuropsychological symptoms including memory loss, chronic fatigue, immune system dysfunction, skin rashes, unusual hair loss, aching joints, headaches, abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred visions, all the female disorders. I think you've discussed that before with Denise.
Mm-hmm.
Gastrointestinal symptoms, all the recurrent diarrhea and constipation, all the neurological system disorders such as numbness of the limb, multiple chemical sensitivity, and all of the birth defects, end quote.
And what are they getting? Are you getting any kind of figures on the birth defects?
Incredible numbers. I mean, it's, you know, just absolutely staggering numbers. It's hard to get anything real solid on it, because you have to understand if the soldier reports this stuff and gets out, they get in trouble. You don't talk about what's happening. Don't tell the truth. That's what's happened to us. I mean, there's a very active program through the individuals in the U.S. Air Force and the Army to do everything they can to prevent us from talking, to prevent the information from getting out. They do anything and everything they can to tell the world and tell the soldiers that we don't know what we're doing. And they thoroughly do everything they can to prevent the soldiers from knowing about the Army regulations and the medical directives, the post-deployment and pre-deployment physical exam requirements.
What about the vaccinations?
A nightmare. Total nightmare. Anthrax is probably the worst of the bunch, much less all the other stuff. And you can't, you know, what we did, and I was involved in giving immunizations, and, you know, I had them all myself. You can't give 8 or 10 immunizations simultaneously without health effects. And then a lot of these are experimental vaccines that they should never be given to begin with. Now, for example, anthrax was squalene. Definitely, absolutely, total confirmed congressional reports, FDA reports, confirming squalene in the anthrax vaccine. The Medcalf report for the U.S. House of Representatives totally confirmed it. And that totally messes up the whole immune system.
Okay, so that was the one thing that I was going to get down to, is whether they're exposed to all these things that just, you know, wreak havoc with their immune systems. Then you put squalene. Why would squalene be there, and which one would it be in, or is it in all of it, or
well,
what?
Well, probably in a lot of them, you know, and there's been a lot of discussion whether squalene's in the flu vaccine now, too. And then what was real interesting with the flu vaccine, I don't know if you heard it in our area, they recall like 800,000 lots or something today.
And the reasoning behind it was?
It's bad.
Well, I think I was hearing something about it wasn't effective.
Yeah, it's a surprise.
Could you?
So you have that. And the reason they did the squalene with the anthrax, first off, you have to understand the U.S. Army deliberately and willfully, this is in the United States Senate Regal Commission report Jimmy Toot wrote, and again, subject of a made-for-TV movie called Thanks to a Grateful Nation we did with Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger. Had all of us in there and all the, you know, the super honchos in it. And what they did, they put squalene in the anthrax vaccine because they didn't have enough doses. So instead of using alum, you put squalene, and it gives you 50 doses instead of one dose.
Okay, but isn't alum kind of a derivative of aluminum or something?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not all good. You know, I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of questions, but I'm not a physician. You know, you need to talk to immunologists to discuss all this.
I don't think I have to be a physician to at least understand some
of
this.
No, I mean, you know, this is a hard thing. They don't want anybody to know this stuff, but anybody can just use common sense and go, wait a minute, this is not good.
I mean, even though I have to kind of chuckle, it, it's not because I'm chuckling because it's funny. It's just unbelievable.
Correct. That's a feeling I have. I mean, you know, when I look at all of these medical problems that the military personnel have and what we have and what caused them, I sit back and I almost have to cry, and I'm going, this is a dream. It can't be for real. But it is. The casualties are real. And what bothers me the most is most people don't want to hear it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to discuss it. And when you go to the American Legion, the VFW, and the AMBITS and say, hey, help us get medical here or take us to our appointments, they run the other way.
That's what I've heard.
The Patriot Guard are great, you know, at funerals. But, I mean, I've called the Patriot Guard here in Illinois and said, hey, we can't get to an appointment. We're still so sick or wounded. We can't drive ourselves. Will you take us? No.
You know, I run across in my area, they have to take them, you know, 150 miles to the VA hospital or somewhere in that vicinity, because there's several of them, actually. But I've seen them mess up and make the vets have to turn around, go home, and come back again instead of seeing them.
I've had that happen to me personally. I mean, you know, and then I've been over there, and individuals have been left sitting there. You know, they'd get a ride, and then there's nobody to take them back. Or I've gone over there, you know, and then they did a medical care and treatment, and I have no way to drive, especially when they, you know, all the eye problems, which are directly attributed to depleted uranium. And much less the nerve agents and the pesticides from Desert Storm.
Well, and you were stating that it's going to contaminate all the ground and all this. I mean, it's got to be contaminating all the food. So here
Absolutely.
You are. So you're being exposed to it externally, and then you're eating things that, you know, take it in, and so you're kind of getting dosed from both ends there.
Correct. And we have to understand this is a snapshot of what we've done in society today. You know, back when I started, you know, originally taking my college courses, you know, and everybody back in the 60s and the 70s, there was a thing called better living through chemistry. Well, we've done better living through chemistry to where we're destroying our environment and our culture and causing medical problems. Alzheimer's, perfect example. All the other stuff, all the sick building syndromes, all of the birth defects that we're seeing that we didn't see before, all learning disabilities that we're seeing that we didn't see before.
How about ALS?
Absolutely. ALS is definitely involved in combat exposures. Absolutely, totally there.
Well, I've run across people that got ALS and didn't even go over there.
Either. No, and they don't have to. Because, again, you get all these exposures. What we had happen with the warrior from Desert Storm and Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, we had extremely healthy individuals that had an incredible toxic exposure. And they're a snapshot of what happens over a long period of time with the average citizen. And a snapshot of what can happen with the elderly. Because we were all extraordinarily healthy when we got deployed. And we came back extraordinarily messed up. And it continues to this day.
So what kind of ramifications do they do to you because of your...
Pardon me?
What kind of ramifications have you had to endure because of your speaking out?
Well, I didn't get promoted anymore, even though I was on a fast track to colonel and general. Lost jobs. Had windows shot out. Been run off the road. Direct threats. Kids have been threatened. Family members have been threatened. Denied medical care, destruction of records. And then, I mean, it never ceases. I mean, you got individuals out there. There's a Colonel Roger Helbig that's always coming after everybody. He coordinates with Colonel Bob Cherry. And what's real interesting, Colonel Bob Cherry got the direct order from the U.S. Department of Energy to do the retaliation, and he said, we're going to do it. And they do. They don't even hesitate.
So what kind of numbers of military do we have active now? Do you have any idea?
Pardon me?
Do you have any idea how many active military we have?
It keeps changing. I'm not sure they change the numbers up and down. You can go to the military websites to find that out.
Okay. Well,
we do know in recruiting in the military, they've been recruiting all kinds of individuals who definitely don't belong in the military. And as a consequence, that's why you're seeing all the crime, all the spousal and child abuse within the military. And then all this stuff is affecting, and the suicide rates within the military are staggering.
Do you think they're all suicides?
No.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of fragging going on.
Okay, and
I mean,
and
we know that it happened, you know, in the Tillman incident. That was definitely a fragging and murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get three M16 bullets in the center of the forehead. That's not an accident.
Right, and.
And that I had another friend here that was shot in the back in the green zone.
Now. Is there anything that they're attributing that to particularly, or?
Good question. Probably they saw what was going on and they were going to speak out. In the Tillman incident, there's all indications he finally realized it was all lies and he was going to speak out.
Well,
and they turned him out to a hero, you know, football player, gave up a career to go to the military.
Well, I mean, I was hearing, I guess, from Vietnam that a lot of them some of the instances where they were going after their commanding officers.
That's happened too many times.
Okay.
It's happened lots and lots of times already.
But do these get documented or they just get covered up?
I don't know. It's there sometimes and sometimes it's not. It's happened a whole bunch. There's been trials and everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's all there. I mean, you go to the military records and everything else. I mean, I've got, you know, files on files on all of that. There's no doubt it's happened.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, that's called fragging.
Okay.
And it's continued. It has happened in all wars, and it's going to continue throughout all wars.
And so, with like Iraq, it doesn't appear that we're going to be getting out of there of any sorts.
We have no intention of it.
Yeah, I'm reconciled to that fact, but you know they still like to kind of bat that around in the public purview. It looks like. Where does Pakistan and all that, is that?
Well, Pakistan is part of the whole scheme for the oil pipeline, so we've got to destabilize Pakistan and everything else. And you have to understand they talk about all these people as if they're some strange force. No, they're actual people that live in those countries that oppose you know, other countries and other people coming in and messing their affairs.
Well, then what about the opium or poppies? Do you...
The Taliban had virtually stopped that completely.
But it's not stopped now.
No. Well, congratulations. CIA doesn't want it stopped.
Yeah. I think they've had that kind of problem, you know, kind of prevalent in other warfare.
The Vietnam War and all this stuff was involved in that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, it gets to be a mess. But what we have in this, you know, and I'm getting pretty tired here.
Oh, okay.
One of the things that we have to understand, today the U.S. military is using weapons throughout the world and here in the United States that cause health and environmental effects through contaminated air, water, and soil. We're deliberately and willfully destroying the infrastructure of nations, releasing inorganic and organic chemical compounds, biological and radiological materials from industry, agriculture, medicine. Okay?
Okay.
And everything, and it's going in the environment. And then we're thoroughly disregarding the health and environmental effects of everything we do. We're not providing medical care to the millions of U.S. casualties we have today. U.S. casualties in the military, they come out, they have to fight for medical care, they have to prove it happened. And I had a phone call again a few hours ago, an individual was over there and totally messed up. They claimed he wasn't even there, and yet he was definitely there, and he got all the photographs, all the records, and he's sick. And they claim he wasn't there, so they deny him care.
Now, is this pretty common?
Absolutely.
Okay,
they denied my care for my problems.
So, have you come up with any way that anybody can do, make any inroads with this?
Well, the easiest thing to do, and I think what everybody is doing, if you're having medical problems from direct health effects from military operations, obviously the Department of Defense, you can try and get them to, you know, force to give them medical care. The other thing, too, what you need to do is go to the Department of Veteran Affairs. Now, you have to understand the doctors in the Department of Veteran Affairs, wherever you are, get their medical licenses through the state that you're in. And it's real. Hold them accountable through the state medical licensing boards. Here's their own written directives. Here's the only acknowledgement. Provide me the medical care. Here are the Army requirements. Provide me the medical care. Here are the Department of Veteran Affairs requirements. Provide me the medical care.
So is there some kind of the privatization that involved in any of this?
No.
No? Okay. I just find it interesting that the state is the one that has the oversight on this, where the federal government in many instances trumps the states.
Well, yeah, but again, it's medical licenses.
Uh-huh.
You know, the doctor might work for the feds, but his license comes from the state. The nurse might work for the feds, but the license comes from the state. They still have to have a license, a medical license, no matter what they're at.
So, okay, so I guess how would we affect that? I mean, is what I'm asking.
Take the solid information. Here's the briefings. Here's the information. Here are the medical directives.
Mm-hmm.
Take that with you to your appointment. Fill out the post-deployment physical assessment. The one you did in the military, we know they're disappearing. Get another copy of it, you know, and we can get those up on the website and get to you. Take those things, thoroughly fill them out. Doesn't matter whether you go back to Vietnam or Korea or World War II. Fill it out when you go in. Mine disappeared, and what I did in the last appointment with my doctor at the VA in Danville, I filled it out going back all the way back to Vietnam, and I took it in and put it in their desk. Here's what happened to me. This is what's occurred. These are medical problems I have. Y'all fix them. Here's the documentation verifying your own documentation, your own reports, your own internal directives. Confirming the medical problems.
So it sounds like you have to keep 5 or 6 copies.
You better, and you better put them in a safe area because you can guarantee they're going to be destroyed at the National Record Center.
Okay, so, but I guess what I was asking is when you deal with these doctors that are state licensed, how are we going to affect them, really?
Well, you say, hey, these are the medical care that's required to do it. You don't want to provide me the medical care? I'll go to the medical board and see how long you keep your medical license.
So, if by getting them out of there, wouldn't they just replace them with other?
The doctor wants to earn a living, okay?
Well, I realize that, but what I'm saying is that the military.
It's not going to hand you very long before they get the clue.
Okay.
You're not going to the military or the VA itself asking to solve the problem. They've already said they won't.
Okay, so then, in other words, so this all comes under the purview, then, of the state.
Well, sure, that's who issues special medical licenses.
Okay.
If you have medical malpractice or don't provide proper medical care, you don't follow the existing guidelines, that falls under your state medical licensing board.
Okay.
Whether a doctor, a nurse, or a technician, an EMT, a rehab specialist, doesn't matter.
So has Denise made any inroads with any of this?
Yeah, it's working here. It's working some other parish where we've done it.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, you know, all of a sudden they've got the clue. Wait a minute. I have to do what's right. This is all about what's doing what's right.
Right.
You know, here's what we know. This is what you acknowledge. This is what we have to do what's right. But you have to understand, those in the Department of Veteran Affairs and Department of Defense, whether Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, or Marines, or Merchant Marine, don't want you to know about this stuff. They do everything to prevent you from having knowledge thereof.
So how long does it take the average person that are in this kind of shape to start getting any kind of care?
A year at least.
Well, that's a long time to be...
You know, so much for, you know, the government health care. I mean, you have to understand, the Department of Defense, the Department of Veteran Affairs are definitely denying care. They're definitely delaying care. They're definitely rationing care.
And there's no ramifications on having to pay back any of this?
No, because you can't sue.
Okay.
Under the Ferris Doctrine, you cannot sue them. So you have no legal recourse. All you can do is ask them. And that's why we come on down to, here's the guidelines. Okay, you got a medical license? Hello.
So it kind of sounds like everything that was a problem when they went in back when they started this thing hasn't really changed a whole lot for them.
No. And we've been working on this for a long time.
And
it just becomes frustrating.
Right.
And day in and day out, phone calls, questions, my own problems, the other people needing help, they call, hey, what's the information? What are the requirements? Here's what we do know. This is what we wrote. This is what they're disregarding. Here's your own internal directives. We have to educate. We have to inform. We have to help.
Dr. Rocky.
Yes, sir.
Have you written a book on this?
Not yet. We've done a lot of television documentaries. You know, Beyond Treason is probably one of the best. Killing Your Own with PBS. We've done 60 Minutes. We've done a Nightline. We've done Dateline. We've done with the BBC British Broadcasting. We've done a whole bunch of documentaries.
Do you have a website?
We have one on the Jimmy Massey story. There's another one called Trooper we just were putting in the can now.
We're doing
everything we can.
Do you have a website?
I don't have any website. Probably the best website is the old Trap Rock website that Charlie Jinks and Sonny Millage started, and that's www.grassrootspeace.org. GRASSROOTS. Peace, PEACE.org. Another one, Denise Nichols does a lot of writing on, and she posted an article today, it was incredible, is on www.veteranstoday.com.
Is this her site, or is it just a...
No, it's another site. I'm not sure. She's doing a lot of contributions and writing a lot of these reports there, doing incredible work. She's an unsung hero. She's one of the true heroes in the military, one of the real nurses.
That's Debbie Nichols?
Yeah, no, Denise Nichols, right
Denise
there
Denise Nichols.
By Denver.
And what's her website again?
The one she's posting everything to and she did today is called VeteransToday.com.
VeteransToday.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to have her back on.
You need to get her back on. Yeah. She's incredible.
Right. And I just, you know, I have to commend you for all the time that you've spent on trying to work with this because it sounds like it's, you know, just you're kind of on a treadmill with it. And
it's a lot more than a treadmill. I'm underwater with a snorkel.
and
hang in there, buddy.
Boy.
And it's scary because what do we tell the kids? What do we do to the families? You know, day in and day out, I get the question. Day in and day out, I get the call. Day in and day out, I get stopped on the street. It doesn't happen until they're affected. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it until all of a sudden they're affected. And once they're affected, they come screaming for help. And by then, it's usually too late.
And as far as your health goes, again, do you have any kind of hope with yours, or you just...
Well, I've got a 60% disability. I'm working with them, trying to get things done to increase it, trying to get the neurological and all the spinal injuries acknowledged and the hearing losses. But it's fighting an uphill battle. But, yeah, I'll make it. I'm getting stuff done. But, again, I have to force it. they're totally afraid. I want to help somebody, or we go in here, or we know what's happening. We carry, walk in with the documents. We walk in with the reports.
Well,
it scares them because they don't know what to do then. They have to take care of us.
Well, I did an interview with one vet who had had to, you know, start covering some of it out of his pocket if he felt like he was going to get covered.
Well, I did. I had to write a check for $1,000 here a couple weeks ago out of my own pocket for my dental.
Well, did they
cover? I mean, even before they did anything, I had to write the check.
Do they cover dental in for you guys?
No, the VA has totally denied it, and even though it's thoroughly acknowledged.
Right, because, I mean, I don't know that they cover dental for much of anything else. Maybe
no,
Medicaid.
You just write a check.
Yeah.
But your TI is willing to knock a few teeth out in your training.
Yeah, they sure are, aren't they?
So, I was hoping maybe there's some inroads made after this period of time. We are
getting there. We're slowly getting more people aware. We're slowly getting treatment. You know, there are indications that General Shinseki and some of his senior staff want to change things. But it's so slow and it's not happening. When you get the regional offices still denying medical care to wounded, ill, and injured vets deliberately and willfully and saying they weren't there, and we all know they were there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they come out and say, my team and I weren't there, I mean, come on, give me a break.
And
they
so,
have to shoot the messenger. They have to prevent the acknowledgement, because what we're seeing, again, I want to come back to it. This is what it's all about. We had extraordinarily healthy young men and women, went in the military, got deployed. They've come back very ill or wounded or injured. It's a snapshot of what we're doing to our culture and society through all the chemical compounds, the biological materials and radiological materials we're using in everyday life.
We have to
stop and think.
What kind
cancers,
of
cancers, respiratory, you know, all of these stuffs are skyrocketing.
What kind of biological materials are they?
What haven't they? The list is long and dangerous.
I mean, it almost makes you sound like that's a way for them to get rid of things.
Correct.
That they... Really?
Yeah. Check in the Regal Commission report. I can send you the report, but,
uh-huh.
I mean, you can go and pull it up, the Regal Commission report. Jimmy Tude wrote for the U.S. Senate, Senator Regal out of Michigan. Get the movie, Thanks for a Grateful Nation, and watch it.
Thanks for a Grateful Nation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Starred Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger.
Oh, okay. So you brought that up earlier. Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, the other ones, you know, the one Killing Your Own, with Gary Noll, Beyond Treason, with the Power Hour, Joyce Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the documentaries are out there. The information is out there.
Right. And
fortunately, you're not going to get it in too many local public libraries, or you're not going to see it on the TV. Just the casualty numbers and the medical problems and all this stuff, we can't get it in local newspapers. We can't get it on, network TV.
Well,
we've done some before, okay?
But if they're bringing that stuff back over here, then they're having they've got to be having casualties with...
We have spouses and children that are absolutely affected, and we've been working with that. We have spouses and children that have died.
Okay, but what I'm talking about is maybe some of the communities that may be on the outskirts of some of these places where they're stockpiling.
I'm getting more and more asking that question.
Okay.
We do work with them, and we try to help them.
Because I mean, when I was reading the information on them bringing the radiation debris or whatever over here, I was thinking it was coming from like nuclear power plants and that sort. But
no, it's all over the battlefield.
Okay, and
it's everything that's been shot up, everything that's been blown up. I mean, you have to understand, we absolutely totally 100% know, and we've got the videos and the photographs. The U.S. military deliberately, in this time in Iraq and Afghanistan, not only destroyed, vehicles and struck like that, but they destroyed water treatment facilities with depleted uranium, sewage sanitation plants with depleted uranium, apartment buildings, civilian apartment buildings and houses, hospitals, and then, so-called military compounds. Just shot it all up, thoroughly contaminated.
Do they use any of the mini nuclear weapons while they're at it?
We've destroyed the reactors.
Well, I remember watching some kind of film on YouTube or something where they just had they'd lost a whole ammunition.
Those are a lot of super explosives, but no indication that I know of nukes.
Okay. Well, I would imagine, you know, any, like you say, super explosions would still have mushroom clouds, and that's what I was seeing coming out of this thing.
Very dangerous. Now, you know, uranium munitions, you can pick these out real fast, okay?
Uh-huh.
The conventional explosive, the fire and everything's out in a nanosecond, okay?
Uh-huh.
With uranium munitions, you'll see the burning fragments. They burn and they burn and they burn and they burn and they burn.
Okay.
And they got extremely high bright white light with yellows and oranges.
Okay.
So, I mean, very, very simple. That's the U. There's no doubt about it.
So what
it's sort
are
of like the impact of the missile on the World Trade Center's second tower before the aircraft hit. The bright flash was a DU missile. There's no doubt about it in my mind whatsoever.
Well, that's nice to hear that it's someone else kind of affirms that that there's something other than something else was going on other than just a plane hitting a tower.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, when you talk to, I trained the New York Police and Fire and Emergency Services Unit on counterterrorism and weapons and chemical and biological and all this stuff, personally assigned by the Army to do it. And so my guys went in there, and then Willie Rodriguez, a good friend of mine, led the rescue. And we know there were no fires or in stairwells or anything like that. We know there were place explosives going off floor by floor. We know the explosives went off in sub-basement 3 and 4 before the aircraft hit. That's a given.
Uh-huh. It's amazing
and
how many...
And the Pentagon, when you look at the photos, and I mean, you actually go on the 911 commission report on page 313, you look and see, wait a minute, there's no indication of an aircraft even hitting it in their own photographs. You get the actual Pentagon performance report, and you review that, and the same thing.
Well, one of the things I noticed from one of the pictures is it looked like whatever hit that first outer ring kind of followed that whole outer ring and didn't necessarily carry through to the other rings, even though...
No, it didn't. I mean, you know, you got no damage. There's no wreckage, no engines, no wings, no tail section. It hit about 14 feet up. When you go to the Pentagon performance report, the formal report in the Pentagon, you see that the fence is standing at about 7 feet, 8 feet high outside the outer ring the next day. Now, you can't put a 757 that's 45 feet high, higher than the Pentagon, 150-foot wingspan, 140 feet long, through a hole that's 12 feet across, and not take down the fence and leave wreckage on the lawn and leave everything. It didn't happen.
And so if these were missiles and whatever, did they ever say that there was anything else involved in what might have been explosive or any kind of radio?
Yeah, there was place explosives in there. There's a lot of indication of that. The smells in there, the individuals were in there, and all the reports that I've talked to personally.
Uh-huh. So, but no, nothing like mini-nuclear type thing?
Well, there's some yeah, I don't know. That's a possibility of the World Trade Center for sure.
Okay. I mean, because there's been so many different speculative things that and one won't acknowledge the other, and you just sit there and go, well, you don't know where to go with it other than the fact that they all came down. Now, as far as residual effects on these firemen and that sort...
It's horrible. It's horrific. I mean, the number that have died and have the medical problems that match Gulf War illness and the things we're having are staggering. We worked with those for years. Try to get a medical care. We tried to get medical care that morning when it happened.
So then that leads you to think there's possibly something radiation.
Well, there definitely was there. There definitely was.
Okay. So, but you don't have a clue as to what it. I mean, would it have been in those explosives?
We don't know.
Uh huh. Interesting. And now, what about the ground itself? Is it still? Are they built?
Well, I mean, we had an EPA conference in Cincinnati. A few years ago, and this was like 2 weeks before Whitman was fired as EPA director, and I was keynote speaker. There was a locked door, closed conference in the EPA facility, and we talked about all the health and environmental effects, all the contamination, you know, for miles and miles around, and that all had to be contaminated and what had to be done. And then, you know, and that's when it all broke loose, and then Whitman was fired because she had said there was no health effects.
Now, are there still residual effects from that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so that it leads one to think that there was some kind of exotic or...
Well, you got conventional explosive. We know we have thermite and thermate, and there probably is exotic stuff, definitely. But just destroying all of that materials and everything else in the fire and the materials, you got all that toxic material released in the fires and the explosions as it came down.
But it's not like there's something still breaking down?
I don't think so.
Okay, all right, because...
You have to talk to, you know, talk to some of the other guys on that.
Uh-huh. Well, I have tried to talk numerous ones, but like I said, you can go off in five different directions at least, and they can all sound plausible. Sometimes it's like, you know, interviewing people on the JFK thing, and you just start going, which one is the whodunit here? So, anything else that might be interesting to bring up on?
I don't know. I mean, we got a nightmare today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the health and environmental effects of war have made war, you know, it can't be done. We're not providing medical care to the men and women who have gone in the military. Okay? We're not mm-hmm. providing medical care to their families. We're not cleaning up the environmental contamination no matter where it is. And we've got to do that. There's no more options. I mean, we can't continue with what we're doing. We can't continue with the lies. We can't continue with contaminated air, water, and soil. You know, as you know, I was talking to the Department of Defense, Secretary of Defense's staff the other day, Kilpatrick's staff. I said, you know, Mike doesn't answer to me. You know, you guys don't answer to me. You got to remember, you answer to God in the end. You better get a hint, better get a clue, and start doing what's right.
Well, but looking at it as a civilian on some of this and trying to hold some of these people accountable for...
Virtually impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you got to hear your congressman, your senator, you know, get to your mayor, because I mean all this stuff affects even down to the community. The communities are having to pick up the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's affecting everybody in every community all over the country. I mean, it's definitely having ripping the communities apart here with three killed in the last, you know, last month. They buried the last one yesterday.
Uh-huh. Do you try to go to a number of those, or
One I did was very close, almost, you know, very, very close. But mm-hmm. the other two, I knew of one of the others, and then the other one I didn't. But I knew, you know, everybody knows somebody that knows them. But two were very, very close.
Is there anybody else along the lines other than just Denise that you feel has been kind of?
Oh, there's
like
a lot of people involved. I mean, our whole mm-hmm. team is still tremendously involved.
Uh huh.
You know, and we were the assigned experts, and we're still trying to do it.
And so is there somebody that's still active going over there and dealing with it out of your team?
Oh, you betcha. The colonels are. They're not happy with them.
How are their health?
Lousy.
Okay. So if you keep being exposed to these sort of things and then they keep deploying you, what is it that finally stops them from deploying you?
Can't go anymore. They can't get up. They can't walk. They can't march. They can't run.
But they'll
That's
take them.
Having to get more people in the military.
But up until that point in time, if they can move and
they'll
do those.
They'll keep going. I mean, you know, the John Wayne macho Rambo instinct.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's just amazing. And
it sounds to me like one solution might be something that Ishmael or Daniel Quinn suggested. It's time for us to just walk away. Stop going, serving the big
institutions,
the corporations.
There was a saying many years ago, what if they gave a war and nobody came?
Yeah, I think that was a song of...
Well, and then you have the instance where you have the towers where you would consider that, you know, an act of war, and yet, you know, nothing. We go off in the wrong direction to deal with it. So,
yeah, but that was our own internal operation.
Right, and so that we're trying to, when you talk about holding these people accountable, I mean, we've got a lot of different directions to start looking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, well, you know, Doug, if you're getting tired and whatever, I don't want to keep you too much longer here unless there's something, some closing things.
No, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, we have to get accountability. We have to call. We have to demand action. We have to help each other. We have to make sure the vets are taken care of, whether they're you know, the World War II vets, Korean War, Vietnam, everything in between, Desert Storm, now the current ones. Don't ignore them. Help them.
That's, I think,
but
what
again, don't look at all this stuff and try and justify and say it's all okay because it's a mess. I mean, one thing I learned with PTSD and having been involved and having this stuff myself, you've got to look at the truth and the reality if you want to get well. You can't keep fighting into your brain, the left half of the brain, the right half of the brain going. I know it was wrong by what I was brought up and what I was taught, but I'm in the military, so it's got to be right. Well, the soldier and everybody keeps fighting that thing, and as long as they keep fighting that brain, they're never going to get well.
What about some of those, are they giving them a lot of those SSRIs?
The what?
The serotonin.
Oh, they mean they're prescribing psychotropics at the same time they need pain meds, at the same time they need antibiotics. I mean, they tried to do it to me. And I'm going, you can't combine those. You guys know that. Well, come on. Wake up. You can't combine this stuff.
And so
I mean, that's what, you know, Heath Ledger, the actor, he died from the combination of psychotropics and pain meds. And then what's happening, you've got psychotropics, you've got pain meds, and then you've got alcohol, and then you've got street drug abuse, and you've got a nightmare.
Yeah, some of those are much more potent than some of the...
Incredibly dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And so...
And you absolutely can't drink alcohol anymore. You definitely shouldn't drink coffee. You shouldn't drink caffeinated beverages. You've got to maintain an extremely well-balanced diet. I mean, we know what should be done. And I mean, I want to make it loud and clear. Anybody that's come back in the military is affected by this. You need to completely stop drinking alcohol. You need to stop drinking caffeinated beverages, coffee. You need to maintain your balance, your diet. Okay?
And
you can't
smoke
anymore.
What does the caffeine have to do with
it? It's a toxin. It just contributes to everything, reduces oxygen and nutritional supply.
Mm-hmm.
And affects the whole body.
Actually, I'm starting to hear information that those enes are affecting all of us.
Correct.
Yeah.
They really do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, you know, continuous discussions all around. There was a discussion, you know, on the radio civilian side, totally nothing to do with the military on all this today. You know, I was coming home listening to the guy who was drinking, you know, how much coffee are you drinking while you're wired?
Right. And so, and...
It had nothing to do with the military at all. It was just strictly their choice.
Mm-hmm.
They were drinking incredible amounts of, you know, Coke and or Mountain Dew and coffee, and they're physically messed up.
Well, while we're at it, what kind of effects are they starting to see on the population in general from these this depleted uranium in the atmosphere?
Well, again, it's all the same thing. I went through all the same the medical problems that are totally confirmed.
Okay, so then these things are also hitting the public.
Oh, I mean, it's far worse on the civilians than on the military. Because the military, we're in and out, and the civilians are there all the time.
Now, are there pockets that are of places?
Oh, absolutely. All around Basra.
Uh-huh.
Staggering the highway of death in Kuwait, here in the United States, down, you know, Vieques, over in Jefferson Proving Ground, Concord, Massachusetts, Albany, New York. Absolutely. Staggering pockets. I mean, what really bothers me is, you know, StarMet, you know, making all this stuff up at Concord, Massachusetts. That's where our nation was born. Has probably the highest medical problems from depleted uranium of any place in the United States, if not the world. Same thing around Albany, New York, at the Aerojet. And then we got down in Tennessee with the Aerojet down there. National Lead in Albany, Aerojet. And then I got a call the other day over in Kansas City. Showing up there, incredible medical problems, and I saw the report. It was staggering from the manufacturing plant there.
What is Aerojet producing that makes it so much
weapons,
more?
DU weapons and everything.
Okay, all right. So there's not just one area they're making them all over?
Oh, no, a lot of places. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Johnstown, Tennessee, all over the place.
Anything in the Rockies?
Oh, yeah, too many. Talk to Denise.
Well, again, I want to thank you for staying up late and letting us...
It's been a long day.
Yeah, giving us all the information that, you know, to remind us of what is still going on and needs to still be addressed, and to support your efforts and getting this information out to the public so that, you know, I mean, it isn't just affecting the troops. Then you're saying it's affecting all of us now.
Absolutely is. And
uh-huh.
That's what bothers us. And I've had, you know, people have been working on this, people I've worked with, I mean, incredible doctors and nurses and scientists and everything else that have been working on this for a long time. A lot of them are frustrated because you feel like you're hitting your head up against a brick wall and you're not making any progress. You make, you know, two steps forward, one step back, three steps forward and two back.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get stopped on a street and somebody says, well, thank you, when I was at a banquet here, Veterans Day banquet here in Rantoul, on Veterans Day, and I had a mother came up and said, God, thank you for helping my son. And that one in itself, he got his medical care, thank you. And that one simple thing made it worthwhile. But, even if we help only one.
Right, and but you have to do it on an individual basis almost.
Correct.
Because it doesn't sound like doing it as a group. It seems like they just kind of stonewall the whole situation. It sounds like they do it to everybody, but they will let people through.
I had the deputy chief of staff here for the state of Illinois and Department of Veteran Affairs for the state of Illinois told me personally on the telephone that the orders and the regulations mandating medical care to flee the uranium exposures and clean up the environment don't exist. And I said, yes, they do. And he said, no, they don't. And I said, yes, they do. I wrote them. And he said, no, they don't. And I said, how do you know? He said, I'm a Marine officer. But now I'm in charge of the VA, Deputy Chief of Staff for the state of Illinois VA. So I wrote it all up, sent everything to them. I never heard back from them. They just ignore you. There's no accountability.
And a lot of denial.
Total denial. They have to deny everything because it's all there.
And what happens to the... And one other thing I just wanted to hit upon is, when these troops pass on or whatever, do the families get anything much for support?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Uh-huh.
I mean, your whole life has ended.
And what about...
Like the one that was buried here yesterday, he left four small children, all less than 9 years old.
And do the families continue to get care at all, or do they get any care?
No. You have to move off the military base, your military stuff ends.
And so if they have birth defects and that sort of thing from the father's or, parents' exposure, then they're out of luck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, my goodness. Again, I want to thank you very much, Doug, for coming on and just hang in there and stick with it and see what we can do on this end. But I can see your frustration.
Yeah, it's so simple. All they have to do is do what's right. Do what they already are required by their own requirements. Acknowledge what's happening.
Uh-huh.
But, we have to understand, we went to wars, and all these wars based on total lies. We've used weapon systems that thoroughly contaminate air, water, and soil, and food, and left medical disasters. And now we've refused to do anything about it.
Right, and they're bringing it home in more ways than one.
Correct, and that's what got me so angry, I guess. I'm not angry or frustrated, and I worked within the system and the military officers for years, and the director, for the DU project, for the whole thing, and they just ignore it. And then when we speak up, everybody that speaks up, they have to shoot the messenger. They never discuss the orders, the regulations, or the environmental cleanup requirements. They just do personal attacks.
But okay, and one other question is, when you do these cleanups and you walk away, it can't possibly be really taken care of.
No, it's not really cleaned up. All we're doing is mitigating the problem.
Okay.
That's the whole reason we put this stuff together. I've got to reduce the probability, reduce the problem. I can't eliminate it. See, that was the reason after I found out and I learned I couldn't do it and I tried all this stuff. That's why I said you couldn't use them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really got them angry.
Wow. Well, again, I want to thank you, Doug, and keep up the good work.
You're welcome. Thank you. But again, you got one of the greatest heroes out there in Colorado, Major Denise Nichols. I can't say enough.
Well,
she saved my life. I made it loud and clear she saved my life.
Well, I will go ahead and try to reconnect with her again.
Yeah, take care.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, William. Thank you, Melody.
Okay, good night. And...